I'm a well-known psychiatrist currently residing in Michigan. Though I do adult counseling sessions, my expertise lies in children's psychology. And this happened last year when I visited my sister's house in Louisville, Kentucky. She lived there with her husband and my 7-year-old niece, Emily. My brother-in-law works in the Navy, so it's mostly my sister and her daughter. Emily has always been a happy, energetic girl. Whenever I would visit, she would run to me and hang like a sloth around my neck, making all kinds of demands. But this time, I noticed something strange. I was sipping the hot coffee when Emily's school bus pulled over. I was getting ready to get showered with pampering and soft giggles of Emily when she walked in with her school bag. She seemed strangely quiet and pale. She didn't even notice me and went straight to her room. "What's wrong? Did you scold her?" My sister answered no and began to cry. She told me how Emily had changed all of a sudden, that she always stays in her room, scribbling in her notebooks.
"With Emily's dad overseas, I don't know what to do. Jacob, can you help me?"
I've never seen my sister break down like this before. She had always been the strongest one in our family. I assured her with a hug that I'll look into the matter myself, that I'll talk to my niece. After dinner, I sat down with Emily in her room. I watched her take the life out of her black crayon to make never-ending circles on white paper.
"You sure love to draw, Em?"
She didn't look at me, just kept greasing the crayon more vigorously. I picked up a couple of her drawings to see what she scribbled. Unlike the usual vibrant chaos, this one particular drawing caught my attention. It was of a worn-out old house depicting a single barred window. By looking at the drawing, I got goosebumps. "Is this the house next door, Em?"
"Yes."
When I asked my sister about this house, she said it had been abandoned for years and no one goes near it. That night, I woke up feeling thirsty and went to the kitchen to grab some water. While navigating to the kitchen, a faint whispering came to my ears. Curiosity tugged at me, so I followed the sound. It was coming from Emily's room. Pushing the door, I found Emily staring out her window and whispering creepily. I couldn't decipher what she was saying, but her small fingers went on making circles on the window glass. Her lips mumbled so fast that it seemed like my niece was possessed. Taking a few steps closer, I placed a comforting hand on Emily's shoulder. In a quick motion, Emily turned around. Her normally bright eyes were vacant white. Her pupils rolled back up into her head. A terrifying smile stretched across her pale face. And then just as abruptly, she fell on the floor. All of a sudden, she just fainted. My sister and I rushed to the nearest emergency room. At the hospital, Emily was burning with fever, her tiny body shivering. In her sleep, she just kept repeatedly saying,
"I saw him. I saw him. The house. The house."
The abandoned house, Emily's drawings, her terrifying state, they all started to form a disturbing picture. Telling my sister to stay by Emily's side, I decided to take a look at the house next door. Something told me my answers would be there. A thick layer of cobwebs and dirt was covering the furniture, and any traces of life were lost. The air felt heavy with the smell of decay. I walked to the room upstairs, the one with the barred window. I pushed open the door while dust rained over me from the ceiling. Moonlight shined through the window, illuminating the room just enough for me to see clearly. And that's when my heart stopped. A woman's lifeless, pale body was lying on the floor. I couldn't see her face, but her lifeless, bony hand stood evidence that she had been dead for quite some days. I almost threw myself up and ran till I lost my breath. Once the cops arrived at the scene, they told us that the woman's name was Janine, and she had been missing for 2 weeks. Her parents said that she had ran away with her boyfriend from a frat party. It unfolded that her boyfriend brought her to this abandoned house in a heavily intoxicated state. The guy must have tried to take advantage of her. When she said no, he silenced her for life. After Emily got a little bit better, the cops questioned her about this house and my poor niece broke down crying. Emily told the cops that she saw a man hurting a girl from her window a couple of days back. Eventually, the cops traced Janine's boyfriend, and my niece shifted back to her normal, cheerful self in no time. Sometimes, it scares me how secretive kids can be, but then again, as adults, we must listen to them. Moving to Manhattan was supposed to be a fresh start for us. Julie, Timothy, and I were finally settled in our new flat, 21 floors up, with the cityscape sprawled beneath us. Life in the Big Apple was a dream come true, and we were thrilled about the future. Timothy was a shy kid. He didn't talk much, but his mom was stoked that he would become a great artist when he'd grow up. He'd spent hours scribbling in his new drawing book, mountains, waterfalls, giant dragons. Timmy had always been imaginative, but soon his artwork began to tell a different story. It started innocently enough. Timmy would draw scenes from our house, family dinners, game nights, etc. But there was always an additional figure in his sketches. A man with red eyes, a big belly, and a thick, unkempt beard. When we asked him about the strange figure, Timmy would simply say,
"It's Angel. He lives under my bed."
Julie and I brushed it off as an imaginary friend, a phase he would outgrow. But one evening, Julie brought me his drawing book and it sent a shiver down my spine. It depicted our bedroom, with Julie and me asleep, and the same red-eyed figure standing over us, watching. Julie tried to laugh it off, saying,
"Kids and their imaginations, right?"
But the unease had already settled deep within me. Soon, Timmy's drawings grew more disturbing. One showed me working on my laptop late in the night, with the angel peeking from behind the door. Another captured Julie in the shower with the angel peeping through the crack in the door. I blamed Timmy's vivid imagination, but Julie pointed out that even the color of her shampoo bottle was the same. I sat Timmy down one afternoon, holding one of the drawings. "Timmy, where do you see Angel? Is he really under your bed?"
"Yes, Daddy. He says he likes our home."
That night, I checked under his bed thoroughly, flashlight in hand. Nothing. I even checked the closets, behind the curtains, every conceivable hiding spot. I was met with nothing but empty spaces and shadows. Still, I couldn't shake the feeling of being watched. Then, one dreadful morning, our world shattered. Julie and I woke up to find Timmy's bed empty. Panic surged through us as we tore through the apartment, calling his name. The windows were shut tight. We were on the 21st floor, so he couldn't have climbed out. The main door was locked from the inside, and he couldn't yet reach the latch. Then where did our son vanish? We called the police immediately. As they arrived, they began a thorough search, combing through every inch of our flat. Julie was in tears. The officer searched, questioned, and hypothesized, but there was no sign of our son. One of the officers, named Detective Harper, took particular interest in Timmy's drawings. He studied each one carefully.
"This Angel, your son mentioned him to you?"
"Yes, he said that Angel lived under his bed. We thought it was just a figment of his imagination." Harper's expression turned grim.
"We need to take a closer look at the bed."
The officers pulled the bed out and started removing the wallpaper, which suddenly revealed a small, false space behind it. My heart pounded as they pulled back the wooden slats, revealing a narrow cavity leading into the darkness. Harper's flashlight beam revealed a shocking sight. It was connected to our neighbor's apartment. They burst into the neighbor's flat, a certain Mr. DeSantos. And there, in a cramped, dimly lit room, was Timmy. He was sitting on the floor, nibbling on a slice of cheesecake, looking dazed but unharmed. Beside him, a man who fit Timmy's drawings perfectly. Big belly, unkempt beard, and bloodshot eyes stared blankly at us.
"DeSantos, you're under arrest."
DeSantos didn't resist. He just smiled, a sickening, knowing smile that made my skin crawl. As the officers led him away, I gathered Timmy in my arms, trembling with relief and horror. Later, we learned the full story. DeSantos had been sneaking into our apartment at night through the hidden passage. He had befriended Timmy, feeding him cheesecakes and earning him trust. He got a kick out of watching us to fulfill some sadistic, voyeuristic tendencies. I filled me with rage to imagine that he was secretly watching my wife bathing. God knows what all he had seen, completely shattering any privacy that we thought we had. Police informed us that he had already had a previous arrest 4 years ago and had recovered multiple recordings of him filming the tenants who used to occupy our house. It was assumed at the time that the man had broken into the flat, but no one had any clue that he had a secret space to enter our flat. We also learned his first name, Angel. We were a normal, happy family. My wife Linda and I, along with our daughter Anna, lived in a quaint two-story house in the suburbs. Everything seemed perfect on the surface level, until the day Anna's teacher, Mrs. White, assigned a harmless project that changed our lives forever. Anna had always loved drawing, and her colorful creations adorned our refrigerator door like medals. One day, when Mrs. White gave the assignment to her students, the topic, Our Happy Family, I expected nothing out of the ordinary. But when Anna turned in her project, Mrs. White called us in for a meeting urgently.
Mr. and Mrs. Thompson, I wanted to discuss Anna's recent drawings.
I glanced at the paper she handed us. It was a typical family portrait, but with an unsettling addition. There, in the background, was a hooded figure, barely visible, but undeniably present.
Who is that supposed to be? Anna calls it the visitor. She says it comes at night.
We exchanged uneasy glances, but shrugged it off as a product of an active imagination. Anna was only 7, after all. I didn't believe in spirits, but I started to keep a track of her drawings. Over the next few days, they became more disturbing. The hooded figure started appearing in almost every image, inching closer to our family. Sometimes it loomed behind us at dinner, other times it stood at the foot of Anna's bed. Each new drawing tightened the knot of fear in my stomach. Concerned, we talked to Anna.
Sweetie, who is this visitor you keep drawing?
He comes at night, Daddy. He says he likes to watch us.
Her innocent tone sent chills down my spine. I tried to dismiss it, but Linda couldn't shake the feeling that something was wrong. One night, we heard noises coming from Anna's room. We found her sleepwalking in her room while she sang a rhyme, clutching the fresh drawing in her hands. It showed the visitor standing right next to her bed. As I looked at the place, suddenly the lights in the room started flickering. That was the last straw. Linda pulled her out, and the very next day I installed cameras in her room, hoping to catch any signs of what was disturbing our daughter. The next afternoon, Linda showed me the drawing. The visitor was wearing a ring with a big red ruby in it. Coincidentally, Linda's ruby ring had been missing for a few days. For 2 nights, we saw nothing unusual. Then, as we reviewed the footage on the third one, our blood ran cold. The camera became grainy. We suddenly saw Anna's bed cover slowly lift and settle back down as if someone was tucking her in. Then the room seemed to have grown cold because we could see Anna's breath in the air like a mist. It was impossible because we were in summers. Then, finally, the cloaked figure appeared, standing by Anna's bed. It was translucent, almost invisible, but it kept oscillating front and back while standing in its place, as if watching her. And then, it suddenly looked towards the camera before instantly vanishing. Linda used to visit our community church on Sundays, so she showed the footage to the pastor, desperate for any help. What he told us was chilling. The man who lived there before us, Harold Grayson, was a mentally disturbed man who believed that he was the key to a battle between the angels and demons. He was infamously spotted in a gray hooded robe buying odd items from local community stores, which he used for some rituals. One day, he was caught loading lots of cans of gasoline behind his truck. When the police inquired, he said that he had to burn the church down because the devil lurks there. Police broke into his house and found that he was performing rituals and storing dead animals in his refrigerator, which he planned to burn with the church to cleanse the place of spirits. He was arrested and later put in a mental institution, and no one had seen him since. Linda and I packed our bags and decided to move away immediately. We decided to stay with relatives until we could sell the house. Before leaving, I saw that Anna kept looking back towards her bedroom, so I asked her what it was.
Anna, do you still see him?
Anna nodded, her eyes teary.
He says he has returned your belongings.
I rushed my family out towards the car without stopping to look back at the house. Strangely, as soon as I put my hand in my pant pocket to pull out the car keys, I found Linda's ruby ring there. My eyes were wide in shock. I looked back towards the house. The light in Anna's room suddenly lit up for a few seconds before turning off again. We never returned to that place.